This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Please open your Bibles to the book of Genesis as Pastor Sandy teaches through chapters 30 through 34.
Here's a riddle. What did the rich man say after he married the two poor sisters? Answer: well, that was mighty big of me. That was mighty big of me, you know. You know, here are a few quotes on bigamy. A bigamist knows the meaning of double trouble. To the bigamist, two heads are better than one. Bigamy is proof that there can be too much of a good thing. And if a wife is a man's better half, what happens if he marries twice? Think about that for a while. Here's a poem I found called Polygamy at Christmas. Peace on earth, goodwill to men. Christ is born in Bethlehem. But think of the man who marries multiple wives. He's in a pickle when Christmas arrives. A bunch of wives for which to live, even for a man with so much to give. I think he will have found there just ain't enough of him to go around. Polygamy at Christmas? What's he to do? Spend it with the family? Man, he's got two. Polygamy at Christmas? He's in a jam. Turkey with Cindy, pudding with Pam. A new dress for Jean or a car for Maxine. Jewelry for Lil or Jesse or Jill. A Christmas shopping list for a polygamist? Well, just wait till he gets the bill. I thought that was a lot more funny than that, but hey, let me say that nobody knew the perils of multiple wives more than Jacob. He was well aware of the problems you have with multiple wives. He married Leah. Then he married Rachel. Then I suppose he thought he was on a roll because he had children by Rachel's maid, Bilhah, and then later by Leah's maid, Zilpah. Jacob learned that two's company, but man, four's a crowd. Proverbs 21, verse 9 states a truth with which all husbands will agree: better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Nobody has courage enough to say amen to that, huh? Now multiply that effect times four, and you begin to understand Jacob's predicament. If ever you doubt God's wisdom in prohibiting polygamy, just wade through this chapter. Jacob lived and his kids were raised in the midst of warring women. We pick it up in verse 1. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." As if Jacob had the power to do that. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" So she said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she shall bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her." Surrogate motherhood was a common practice in Oriental culture. You remember, this was what Sarah suggested to Abraham when he had a son by her maid Hagar. His name was Ishmael. Verse 4, then she gave him Bilhah, her wife, as her maid as wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son." Therefore she called his name Dan, which means judge. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, "With great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed." So she called his name Naphtali, or my wrestlings. And now a baby battle really begins to rage. Verse 9. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "A troop comes." And so she called his name Gad, which means troop. Leah is vowing that her maid is going to have a whole army of babies. She's saying, now take that. Here comes a troop. She's determined to have more kids than her sister. I'm telling you, polygamy is a bad idea. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Asher, which means happy. Verse 14, now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field. Now the word mandrake literally means love apples. The ancients believed that these mandrakes were able to enhance a woman's fertility. And so Reuben brought them to his mother Leah. And then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. This is how desperate Rachel is to bear a child. How desperate she is to keep up with her sister. She sells her husband's affections for what she thinks is a fertility drug. Well, when Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband. And so she called his name Issachar, which means hire. Leah somehow feels vindicated here for all she's done in this conflict with Rachel. And imagine how Rachel feels after she trades a night with Jacob for a bouquet of these mandrakes. And now she sees that Leah has conceived and has given birth again. She is mad. She is frustrated. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. And so she called his name Zebulun, which means dwelling. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And of course, the word Joseph means to add. And the Lord will add to her another son, but it will come at a steep price. For when we get over to chapter 35, Jacob and Rachel will enter into the land of Canaan. And as they near Bethlehem, Rachel goes into a life-ending labor. She gives birth, all right, to a son named Benjamin, but it will cost her life. Verse 25. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. It's time for Jacob to head home. And Laban said to him, please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. Then he said, name me your wages and I will give it. In other words, Laban is asking Jacob, hey, what's it going to take to keep you around for a little while longer? And so Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it is now increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, You shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. Now, in the Middle East, even to this day, most sheep are white, solid white, and most goats are brown or black. Solid pigmentation is the dominant trait. According to the laws of genetics, there are recessive and dominant traits. Solid pigmentation is caused by dominant genes. Spotted or speckled skins are recessive traits. Now, obviously, Laban thinks that he's going to end up with far more livestock than Jacob, because Jacob asked for the spotted and the speckled, while he decides to leave Laban with the solid color animals. Verse 33, though, tells us, "So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come, when the subject of my wages comes before you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me." And Laban said, "Oh, that it were according to your word." In other words, this arrangement really benefits Laban. "Yeah, I like this," he says. By cutting out from the herds the speckled and the spotted animals, there's now even less chance for them to produce more speckled and spotted. And so Laban likes the whole notion. He thinks this is going to be a windfall for him. And so he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and gave them into the hands of his sons. Then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Laban took Jacob's speckled and spotted herds and put them at a distance between him and Jacob. And Jacob continued to care for Laban's herds. But in verse 37, Jacob employs an unusual practice. "Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and of the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled he set before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. And so the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted." Perhaps Jacob here engaged in a form of selective breeding. It could be that somehow he matched up certain types and in certain traits and genetic situations in order to maximize the birth of the speckled and the spotted. It's also possible that the rods that he placed in the gutters or in the watering troughs actually contained some kind of a chemical in them that affected the pigmentation, so that there would end up being more speckled and spotted. We're not really sure exactly what was behind his methods here, but obviously God blessed him and caused his herds, the speckled and the spotted, to increase. Here's also another possible interpretation of what's going on here. When you flip over to chapter 33, verses 10 through 12, those verses indicate that God gave to Jacob a dream where he saw the speckled and spotted of the herd, that they would be more prosperous than the solid colors. Of course, genetically speaking, this was improbable, but God worked in spite of the scientific laws in order to bless Jacob. And it could be that Jacob is here acting in faith. He's acting in faith based on the promise that he received in that dream. In other words, God is not blessing Jacob's cleverness here as much as he's blessing his faith. And isn't this the lesson that God has been trying to teach Jacob all along? Because here's the guy who had trusted in his cleverness. Here is the guy who had resorted to deception and manipulation to steal his brother's birthright and then to deceive his own father. In both cases, if he'd just trusted God, if he'd waited on God, if he had walked by faith, God would have worked all those situations out for his good and for God's glory. But instead, Jacob is always getting in God's way, trying to work things out through his own ingenuity. Perhaps here, God is trying to teach him that, hey, this is a situation where I'm going to work despite the probabilities. Here's a situation where you need to trust not in your cleverness, but that you need to trust in me. Perhaps he's trying to show Jacob that it's time to trust rather than scheme. Well, verse 40 tells us, "Then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the streaked and all the brown in the flock of Laban. But he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flock. The weak sheep bred the weak and the healthy bred with the healthy, and thus it made Jacob's herd stronger. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. And thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. Through it all, God prospered Jacob and grew his herds. Chapter 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. Now God had put this desire in his heart earlier, to go home. It's time to go home. But he's had to wait, and in the process, God has blessed him. And whenever God requires us to wait, guys, it's because he wants to bless us. It's because he wants to prepare us. Now, though, the time is to act on that earlier desire. And so Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock, and said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckle. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. In other words, Jacob is admitting really that it hasn't been his breeding techniques that's caused him to prosper. It's been God's blessing. Hey, if Laban said, you'll get the speckled were born. If he said, you get the streaked were born. God was working. God was the one who blessed him. You know, this is what frustrates me when it comes to a lot of these church growth conferences that are now being held today. You know, it seems that every time a church grows, the pastor in turn wants to hold some kind of a seminar to teach his own particular methods and his own particular techniques to the pastors. It's as if he's promoting his own cleverness rather than giving the credit and the glory to God. You know, whatever happened, man, that God just blessed us. We weren't doing anything. We didn't know what we were doing. But you know, God blessed us. And God worked, and God accomplished something. Jacob admits, this isn't his brilliance. This is God's blessing that has increased his flock. Verse 10, and it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob, again, this is the dream that may have brought about the arrangement that they had formed earlier. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift your eyes now and see. All the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray spotted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. Jacob, in other words, received some insider information. It was like receiving a stock market tip from an angel, no less. Pretty trustworthy source there. They can't send you to jail if it's from an angel. And notice, it's not just any angel. Notice that. We're told, but the angel or messenger of God. Notice who this messenger is. He says, the angel of God. And then he says, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. Here the angel identifies himself as God, as the one true God who met Jacob at Bethel before he left to go to Haran in the first place. Obviously, this angel, if he claims to be God, has to be a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ. I believe it was Jesus here that was appearing to Jacob. Verse 14. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Now amazingly, the sisters finally come together. They finally agree on something. They agree on their common greed. Are we not considered strangers by him? Where's our inheritance in all this? Where's daddy's allotment to us? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. They no longer have any loyalty to their father Laban. Now they're ready to move on and follow Jacob. Then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels. And he carried away all his livestock and all the possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. In other words, Jacob loads up his caravan and he tries to sneak out of town. Verse 19. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Now Jacob is sneaking out of town while Laban is out shearing the sheep. He doesn't really want a confrontation with Laban. He just wants to kind of get out of Dodge while he can. He's moving at midnight, you know. And it says here that Rachel had stolen the household idols. Now there are some that assume by that Rachel was an idolatress. That's not what this means. Remember, the reason that Rebekah sent her son to Haran in the first place was so that he could find a wife that was a believer, not an idolater. I think a better explanation for Rachel's actions here is that these idols, or teraphim as they're called, they symbolized household ownership. They were sort of the family heirlooms, you might say. And so by her taking these, she was essentially saying that the inheritance belonged to her. It was her claim to the family's fortune. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, and that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. I mean, he's trying to avoid any confrontation with Laban. And so he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river Euphrates, and he headed toward the mountains of Gilead, 300 miles away. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. That means that Jacob had a three-day head start. Then Laban took his brethren with him and pursued Jacob for 7 days' journey. And he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." God was protecting Jacob in advance. And so Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp." Do you really think he would have? I mean, through all of this breeding and through God's blessing, I mean, basically, Jacob has taken over his whole herds, all of his possessions. Now he's leaving with his daughters and his grandkids, and Laban is not a happy camper here. Verse 28, "And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' And now you have surely gone because you greatly longed for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" He's talking about those household idols. But isn't that a funny thought? Why did you steal my gods? Who'd want a god that could be stolen in the first place? If your God's not powerful enough to not be stolen, you don't have much of a God. This is the folly of idolatry.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, There's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.